issues. The assistance to connect us is working as hard as they can. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, the Deputy Minister, all colleagues, all protocol observed.
If you didn't observe the protocol, you can spread it out longer.
Please allow me to, in the first instance, express my sincere apologies for the administrative glitches this morning, which arose shortly before leaving the office. We discovered the asset register presentation has two parts. The second part, which gives photographic imagery, is very large and appears not to have been printed. We are rushing prints, and we will circulate these prints during the course of the presentation. My name is Peter Chiapasco. I'm the Acting Deputy Director General Asset Investment Management currently. I'm leading the delegation this morning. I will ask members to introduce themselves. We are here to present progress on the department's immovable asset register enhancement program. The tail end of the presentation has been added to include asset condition assessments, which I think is a standover from last week's portfolio committee meeting, and I'll do my best to present on the subject matter.
Thank you, Mr. Chiapasco. I see that you are panicking. I wanted to follow the agenda and tendering of apologies, and we jumped together. Two apologies, one from Honorable Gaylor, and Stolle will be late. Deputy Minister.
And also, if I could be, there's also a select committee meeting on the IDT. Over in the new wing, so and that starts at 10. So I think because this committee functions so well, I will, if you don't mind, excuse myself and go over to the select committee.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Also, an apology from the DG who is on sick leave, and also from the Minister. Over to you, Mr. Chiapasco.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and I have taken a deep breath and am ready to proceed with the day's event. Can I then ask my members or the members of the DPW delegation to introduce themselves? Thank you.
Good morning, Deputy Minister, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Yake Kwinana. I'm the Head of Finance, Property Management Trading Entity.
Good morning, Chairperson and Deputy Minister and the members. My name is Mzwani Lesozona, the National Coordinator for Prestige.
Good morning, Chairperson, Deputy Minister and Honourable Members. My name is Diana Lekoma. I'm responsible for Parliamentary and Intergovernmental Relations. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I would also like to welcome the Office of the Auditor General. You are welcome. Over to you, Mr. Chiapasco.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. As indicated, the purpose of the presentation is to report on progress with the Department's Immovable Asset Register Enhancement Program to date. And moving through the presentation, we will spend a few moments looking at the background to recap, if you like, on where the journey with the Department's Asset Register Program began. The extent to which we are engaging with our provincial custodial counterparts, where we are with vesting, certain other key enhancement-related activities, our thoughts for the future, which in this instance would be to champion and lead the Giama process and with a view to extending it to having it extended to local government a little down the line, and then to share with visual demonstration of what some of the asset register rebuild looks like, and then to sum up the presentation with the rollover from last week, if you like, which is the asset condition assessment guideline. The purpose, as I've indicated, is to provide this update. In terms of the background, and this is the journey that we have started, it's to remind ourselves that why are we?
I can play that.
Why are we in the, why have we been in the situation with the assets that has necessitated an enhancement program? And principally, there are a number of structural issues, and we just list them to recap. And that is that there, in the first instance, has been continuous lack of clarity on the nature of extent of state immovable assets as a consequence of a variety of historical and current factors, which include a number of issues such as the existing of multiple landholding institutions pre-27 April 1994, organizational complexities in the management of the transition post-94, which resulted in the loss and misplacement of some records, as well as the control of some immovable assets being placed in the hands of private parties. And one is speaking very broadly here. One is not confining this to public works, but rather an issue in broad terms. The fact that a surveying of state land has not been complete in all instances, as well as the fact that vesting has not been completed in all instances. Vesting, members and Honourable Chairperson will recall, is prior to conveyancing, where a specific custodian then is assigned the responsibility formally in a vesting document known as an item 28.1 certificate that identifies the property as being specifically under the custodianship of one or another specific department. And that gives clarity as to whose assets belong to who. A significant issue is the magnitude of the state's immovable asset portfolio in relation to the capacity to manage and maintain it. Certainly this is a huge part of what has been the problem. There are a number of unprocessed legacy transactions, expropriations, sales, transfers incorrectly processed by the state attorney or not updated correctly on deeds records, data in the deeds not accurate when compared to title deeds, integration cooperation from relevant stakeholders, and certainly activities by user departments where certain transactions would happen on state assets not always reported to the custodian. This then is just a summary, if you like, of the bigger picture behind the entire immovable asset scenario as it pertains to government. What needed to be done then? First of all, amongst all the custodians, there was a necessity to identify all registered state immovable assets, to identify relevant ownership records. This would be a mixture of title deeds, physical item 28.1 certificates, the actual documents that then you have as evidence. The determination of custodianship of state immovable assets in accordance with legislation, this would have necessitated going back to where certain custodians were promulgated by their relevant authorities as custodians of such to then show that in this specific area of government a particular custodian is then nominated appointed as the custodian. Thereafter, to commence with an exercise of desktop, followed by physical verification of the assets, confirmation of vesting, enhancement of the immovable asset registers themselves, certainly augmenting the capacity to manage and maintain such large portfolios amongst the custodians, the identification of state immovable assets controlled by other parties, through the reconciliations, what then is controlled by other parties would hopefully become evident, and would lead to a process whereby these would then be reclaimed by the state. And ultimately improving the reporting and management of such assets in terms of reporting requirements. Specifically for the Department of Public Works, in addressing those issues in what needed to be done, the department conceptualized an immovable asset register enhancement program in late 2011. My understanding is it started in October 2011, and basically a three-year roadmap to the end of March 2016 was conceptualized. Various work packages were identified with timeframes assigned, and broadly what we have is a project execution plan that was shared with the committee in terms of where the department aims to be at a particular point in time to achieve its enhanced, complete, immovable asset register. What has been done as a broad family of custodians, the Department and Rural Development as the main national custodians have assumed a collective leading role in the identification and correct classification of immovable assets. In view of the existence of legislation which empower other authorities in the national and provincial sphere to control state immovable assets, mechanisms had to be devised to bring all the actors together towards determining, amongst other things, the extent of state immovable assets. In this regard, the department, as well as the Department of Rural Development, created an intergovernmental structure. It is currently known by the name of the Provincial State Land Vesting and Disposal Committee, with a view to coordinate immovable asset disposal processes, as well as confirmation of vesting of all state immovable assets in the national and provincial spheres. In broad terms, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, whenever there's a transaction on an asset in terms of confirming whether it belongs to one or other sphere of government, these provincial state land vesting and disposal committees bring together at a provincial level, under the management of rural development, the various custodians, so that there is agreement amongst the various custodians in this regard. And this has certainly helped the reconciliation process. The intention of this PSLVDC was to prevent the possible disposal of an immovable asset controlled by one department, whilst in fact it may be required by another for its service delivery purposes. So typically, if Public Works wanted to transact on a specific asset, it would check then with the province or other custodians to identify whether they, for instance, would have such need for this asset, and vice versa. So there's discussion amongst the custodians at various national and provincial levels on specifically the need for assets, as well as confirmation of who they vest with. The PSLVDC also serves to achieve consensus among all state immovable asset controlling departments on whether an immovable asset vests in the specific national or provincial sphere, which is what I've just indicated. In 2009, Cabinet set up an IMC on immovable assets. The IMC is chaired by the Minister of Public Works, includes Minister of Finance and that of Rural Development and Land Reform as members. Flowing from this is the DG Committee, and then there's the Committee of Officials, and there's fairly robust interaction through the committee, the various committees, specifically with Finance and Treasury in relation to the auditing and accounting of assets, leading to what is known as the sector-specific guide. And that is a specific forum that has defined how one as custodian will account for immovable assets through the committee that has been formed as a result of the IMC. A national surveying program was initiated in 2011 under the leadership of the Chief Surveyor General. The surveying has been a very big issue because not all state land was surveyed, and that specific department was tasked with a requirement to survey the land. The plan was aimed at identifying and surveying all unsurveyed land and state domestic facilities. The surveying has practically been completed, except for minor gap areas or slivers of state land between river and bank boundaries. Though surveying has been done correctly in terms of the Land Survey Act, there are a few challenges relating to the separation of provincial facilities from larger national land parcels. This is currently being addressed by the Chief Surveyor General in the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. So once again, this is a broad issue that would touch all custodians where surveying of unsurveyed land is applicable. As can be appreciated from the above slides, the magnitude of state immovable asset portfolios and their challenges has necessitated a multifaceted collaborative approach at various levels. Having set the background, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, I will then zoom into the Department's immovable asset register and where we are specifically with that. In terms of progress from inception to the 31st of March last year, being the first of the 3 years mapped out, comfort on completeness of land parcels was achieved, And this assisted us with the results in the audit, and I'll have a slide a little later on that will discuss that. There's been significant interaction with the state land custodians, both at PSL VDC level, as well as ongoing reconciliations in our own effort to get our asset register 100% right. We've worked with the provincial custodians to analyze and reconcile registered land. This has been very robust. It's been reported through all our structures. We have really a robust engagement in that regard. Clear requirements were defined for immovable asset register and related matters. This informed the project execution plan, as well as policy requirements. Again, I'll speak to that a little later, in terms of accounting and management issues in relation to assets. Owing to the magnitude of the exercise and the resource requirement in the department, vendors or service providers were appointed to assist us with physical verification and condition assessments. Physical verification commenced in that first year. The first part of it was the development of software, the procurement of tools, the definition of clear processes, and especially the issue of quality control procedures. So when the information is provided to us, we have comfort that in fact the information is correct. On item 7, a fairly complex issue is the state domestic facilities, being where state buildings were built for historical reasons on somebody else's land. An example of this might be a police station in a rural area where the department did not own land and either had to enter into a relationship with a local authority or the province, and owing to the urgency of the matter, a permission to occupy or permission to occupy and build would have been granted. The issue of clearing the domestic state facilities means to link the building that belongs to public works and to excise the land below that through discussion with the party to whom is custodian, so that we have an integrated land building arrangement. This is quite complex. The number is fairly large and will require time, and it's certainly in our map within the 3-year program to resolve these issues. During the current financial year, our plan to achieve is ongoing deeds refresher for registered land parcels. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members will recall that there are transactions occurring, and the important thing is that the asset register will need to be sustained on an ongoing basis. So building on the success of last year, it's an ongoing thing to keep this thing updated and to constantly verify and track your records so you have comfort that that the situation is in fact as depicted. We are building the immovable asset register for surveyed non-registered land. We are building the asset register, as I've previously mentioned, for the SDS, that is the scoping and the initial steps towards giving us that as a sorted item. We are right in the midst of our physical verification process, which is an additional support to the confirmation of the nature of our assets. I will discuss that a little later. We have prepared an immovable asset register suite of policies and processes. Currently, these are awaiting approval, and our target is to have this approved by the end of the financial year. This will include the accounting side of the asset register. We're looking at capitalizing projects with effect from the 1st of April. Well, we did look at capitalizing projects with effect from the 1st of April. We have commenced applying the municipal value to properties, this being the valuation methodology that we are championing. We are looking at linking correct municipal rates accounts to the immovable assets on the asset register, so we are then paying the right rates and taxes linked to the correct asset that it belongs to. And certainly we have initiated the operation take back. The slide before you is an indication of how we have moved in terms of the audit, specifically for the asset register. The bottom line indicates that in 11-12 there was a disclaimer, and we improved in 2013 to qualified. In fact, on the various assertions, completeness, etc., we were unqualified. The reason the department was qualified on its asset register was the valuation. We did not, well, it was not in the plan at the time to do it in that specific year, but we're hoping in the current financial year to have made sufficient, to have demonstrated sufficient progress on the valuations with our methodology, and thereby achieve an unqualified audit on the asset register. That is our target for the end of the financial year. We have put a pie chart as a depiction of the overall picture as it looks currently. This is obviously as a result of all the integrated discussions with the various custodians. And in broad terms, it would seem as if state land comprises 184,011 land parcels, parastatals 10,322, municipalities have 985,782, and private parties own the 7,423,167. This is just to give a sense of the global South African asset register, if you like, with information at our disposal, and we then look at our part within that overall picture. We come down to the slide which breaks down the 184,011 being the state land parcels. And this is for the category that are registered and unregistered, which is where we are currently with the with basically the construction of our asset register.
Madam Chair, can I have a quick, for clarity here, quick question?
Yes, I remember.
Mr. Presenter talks about land parcels. That's useful, but do you have an idea of the size of the land in each of these categories?
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, if I may just address that question. I have not got the information here today, but the information related to public works as portion of that we have. I cannot categorically say in the meeting whether I have for the totality, which would be these large numbers at the bottom. I would certainly be willing back at the office to check whether the information is available to us. But one would assume that by adding all of that, you'd get the total square meterage of South Africa at the end of the day. I don't have the information with me. I would be very happy to go back to the office and see if that information is available to us. But for public works, we, through our process of the enhancement of the asset register, would for our portion have that information. Okay. Through the reconciliation with the provincial custodians, public works, provincial and ourselves, rural development, as well as human settlement, the picture or the breakdown, if you like, of the 184,011 is presented in the slide before you. And the department's movable assets for those categories of assets are 37,703 as we speak, being January 2014. The two highlighted numbers, the 1,459, which is allocation of custodianship in process, thus disclosed by National. DTW is currently resolving these with the various custodians where these properties have been identified, with a view to completing this exercise by March 2014. The second item, which is the 4,125, being provincial surveyed but not registered land, being the S42 certificates. These were disclosed by Public Works National for 2012-13 as per the sector-specific guide I spoke to earlier, the version that applied to 2012-13. Provinces will then disclose these in 13-14 as per the new sector-specific guide. I will jump to progress with physical verification being the next key activity on our roadmap to completing the asset register. As mentioned previously, the department has embarked on a process of physical verification of its immovable assets to in fact confirm the desktop information that we'd reconciled, the deeds records that we'd reconciled in the previous financial year. Owing to the magnitude of the task, two service providers were appointed to assist us with this task, and we manage them. we get the results from them. There are robust quality assurance programs to ensure that the output at the end of the day is as accurate and robust as can be. The physical verification project commenced on the 11th of October 2013, and the planned date of completion is the 28th of February. Perhaps I will expand a little on this. Owing to the magnitude and the complexity, the date of the 28th of February will be achieved at the end of March, and I'll explain why. We gave the service providers the reconciled information from the deed records. When they go to site, part of the reconciliation that they have to do leads to certain processes where they might have to come back to head office, double-check information, go back to the site. So there's a reconciliation process within that, and it's a significant number. It's 42,000 sites that were given for them to reconcile. There are within one of the teams, within one of the service providers, there are currently 50 teams throughout the country for the provinces that they have been assigned. It's a very big exercise. But we are sitting, as we speak, at 83% completion, with quality assurance processes being completed. The quality assurance processes are that the teams on site report to the service provider at their head office, who does the first round of quality assurance. It comes through to the department. The regional offices in the first instance do the quality assurance based with the information on the asset register. It then comes through to head office, and there are two quality assurance processes in head office within the asset register unit. So we are sitting at 83%. We are targeting the remainder by the end of March. We have written assurances from the service providers, and our intention is to get that unqualified audit for the asset register. And we are sure that, well, we are really, really striving that within the audit period, we will have completed this exercise. The results, as they were on the 17th of March, are on the slide in front of you. There is the total population that we had asked them to check on, being the 42,868 land parcels. At that point, they'd physically verified and taken 32,570 through the quality assurance process. The figure this morning has jumped up to over 34,000. A number of these are going to be those SDFs, which will be a little bit more complicated and laborious to resolve. But progress at 82% is a very robust achievement given the large number of assets that we're looking at. I think the next phase of the department's improvement program in terms of its three-year time frame is what we know as phase two. And I'd like to share some of the key elements with the honourable members. The service provider to assist us with this has been onboarded with effect of January. There are various work streams and resources basically appointed to the various programs. And this is just a snapshot of some of them. There's management of the physical assessment stream and the quality assurance processes. There's a team working to ensure GRAP compliance in the context of the PMTE. There's a team working on readiness of the IE works to accept the immovable asset register compliant information with a suitable accounting platform. We have quite a target to meet on vesting, as well as to basically supplement our current internal teams and ensure that there is skills transfer. That is not negotiable. There will be skills transfer. There are two packages, if you like. There's the immovable asset register exercise. The work packages are registered land surveyed and not registered land, state domestic facilities, the physical assessment team, the fair value team, the property rates team, the heritage assets team, the GRAP accounting team. On the other side, there are other issues relating to that, which is vesting, the finance specification, the operation take back, the operating model, which is to ensure that within the department we have a sustainable structure capacitated to ensure that what we have achieved at this point in time does not roll back thereafter. We're really adamant that this is the one time we get this asset register up and running, and it is sustained at that level by a proper operating model. Paper trail is quite an important exercise for us. It's our recording of the asset information to ensure that at any point in time the evidentiary document is held for every single asset. From an accounting perspective, there are 7 or 8 critical items, such as the title deed, the section 28.1, the various surveying diagrams, etc., and our paper trail program will ensure that for all these thousands of assets, we have those identifiers for each of these assets. To share with members some of the key successes to date, certainly as reported in last year's audits, there was definitely increased confidence in the data and numbers being reported, as evidenced in those results where we were unqualified except for the valuation. The physical assessment to corroborate and prove, if you like, the enhanced cleansed immovable asset register is a very big exercise, and to have achieved 83% in the time frame is in our view, certainly an achievement. Identified transaction for investigation and follow-up. This is Operation Take-Back. There are findings emerging on from the physical verification process, and the work stream will then follow up on these to resolve the issues. A vesting factory has been set up in the department. We call it that in familial terms. It's basically to ensure that the vesting target is achieved in 2016, and there's a project execution plan for that over the period of 3 years. The vesting factory largely is the processes. We've examined the processes for vesting. We've identified where we need extra capacity, and it's a two-departmental process. The department has to request vesting of its assets, hand them over to rural development, who then do the physical vesting transaction themselves. But in order to do that, the department must champion this, take it through to that provincial state land vesting and disposal committee. They require lots of supporting information, surveying of land, etc. That's quite a big project for us. System enhancement on IE Works, ahead of an envisaged go-live during 2014, as well as to integrate the movable asset register with required accounting and reporting system. There's been very good teamwork with the members in both our IT division as well as in the department's finance division to ensure that the asset register links with the various system finance and accounting requirements. We have also discussed the matter of IE Works with the provinces, and in the third quarter of last year, there's been consensus with the public works family, if you like, that we will all be using IE Works as an asset register module. This will certainly assist, have, or contribute towards the global picture of a national asset register, where amongst the public works custodians, we will all be working on the same database, being the IE Works. And of course, we've onboarded the team to assist us meet the 2016 target. We'd also like to share with Honourable Chairs and Honourable Members the joint action plan between the National and Provincial Public Works, where I had indicated earlier that the engagement is very robust. There are a number of key issues in this regard that will take us through to 2016, where we do work very closely with the provinces. The first is continuous work and has annual timeframes in relation to the audit and accounting, and that is to address management assertions and reconciliation of information. The internal departmental team with their counterparts in their provinces have ongoing meetings with regards to reconciliation, and data is exchanged and provided with each other monthly. The second issue is the capitalization of state immovable assets. Again, the national and provincial teams are working very closely in this regard. We have drafted a policy on capitalization. We are reviewing it for completion as indicated by the end of March, and we have shared this with the provinces so they can understand how we as national are capitalizing our assets, and hopefully they will do the same to the extent that it's applicable to them. And we think that that is quite positive in terms of bringing everybody under the same way of operating. With regards to the vesting of state land, whilst we have our program to 2016, we have the PSL BBC committee, and there's regular monthly meetings, sometimes even more frequently, to look at this vesting requirement. The surveying of state land, we are working closely with Department of Rural Development and specifically the Chief Surveyor General's office. They are assisting us, in fact they are assisting all custodians to survey the SDF, and they have to commence the surveying process, and this will position us to go forwards with the SDF reconciliation. With regards to the devolution of immovable assets to the provinces, this is a historical initiative. It's 90% complete, and it's about the provinces now confirming the custodianship of the assets. In relation to the various compliance of immovable asset registered to various prescripts, such as the PFMA, KIAMA, National Treasury guidelines, I think there's an audit action plan for national and the provinces to address compliance at each financial year. And again, there is robust interaction between the asset register and financial teams, both sides, both asset register as well as through the CFO forums where these things are discussed. And this occurs extremely regularly. It's scheduled. With regards to confirmation of the custodians of immovable assets, DPW had requested through the provinces, basically our public works family, and our minister wrote to the premiers requesting confirmation of who the provincial custodians are. We have received all that information. We know exactly who the appointed custodians are. We've gone a step further now. We have developed a draft custodial framework. We'd like to take this forward with all custodians so that all custodians are working in a common way around the custodial responsibilities for the asset register, amongst other things. In relation to Operation Takeback, this is work in progress for phase two. We have concentrated the current financial year and the previous financial year on reconciling the deeds records, and now with the physical verification, and I think the results of that will show us where there are issues that need to be followed on, or followed up, if you like, in terms of taking back any assets that should not have been, that should be taken back, let me put it that way. The slide on page 24 shows the provincial DPW's position as of September 2013, which for purposes of the presentation is the latest information we had. And basically it gives the number of assets. It links back to the previous slide where there is a provincial breakdown. It just gives a bit more information on those assets which are surveyed but not registered, those which are deemed provincial, and those which are vested. The deemed provincial is where it's 90% complete and just requires the confirmation by the provinces that yes, in fact, they do recognize that these assets are theirs, and there are processes to get this sorted out by the end of the financial year. With regards to DPW vesting, this will be our own vesting picture as the National Department of Public Works. The current picture shows, if this is our large number of assets, the yellow is what remains to be vested, and the grey indicates what is vested. So we need to turn those yellows into grey by March 2016, for which the vesting factory, the association with rural development, the additional capacitation within rural development that has been put in place, and certainly within the department, the supply line or the pipeline to rural development is there. We are currently on track this financial year. We have provided, certainly quarter by quarter, and by the end of the fourth quarter, we will have provided whatever is required in this year's pipeline to rural development. We are working very closely with them to ensure that their capacitation is adequate to turn these actually into vested properties. This is a graphical depiction of basically that slide to indicate what needs to be achieved in Vesting by March 2016. Other key immovable asset register enhancement related activities, we thought it would be quite useful to share with members a number of other issues for information and sharing. And the first issue, if I can just turn to my slide, is in relation to reconciling state land. In the first instance, we'd like to share that the way this has been organized is that land parcels in the former TBVC states have been recorded in the Immovable Asset Register of Rural Development. This is land parcels. And this comes from constitutional provisions at the time of 1994. Facilities used by the national government in the former TBVC states have been recorded in DPW's Immovable Asset Register. And facilities used by the provincial government in the former TBV states have been recorded by the respective provinces. This is how it's understood by all the custodians, and this is the way the properties of the state in the former TBVC, if you like, have been apportioned to various custodians. So we're very clear that if there are properties in former TBVC where national government and its users are currently occupying, then we have recorded those properties in our asset register. Where the land below that is not vested to us, that then are the SDFs that need to be sorted. So typically, if there's a police station in what would have been the former Transkei, and the land is not DPW's, but the former Transkei authority, if you like, then the SDF reconciliation process, we hope to negotiate and make sure that the underlying land parcel is linked then with the asset and made available as a total asset to DPW, and we hope that we'll be successful in that discussion. An immovable asset policy document for the PMTE has been drafted, covering all asset management and accounting requirements. This is quite an achievement, and we hope to have this approved by the end of the financial year. We'd also like to share and have a point of clarity on the issue of foreign state-owned immovable assets. The Department of International Relations and Cooperation was assigned custodianship of foreign assets during 1999, and they have been responsible for the management of such assets, including presentation and disclosure in annual financial statements, except disposal of such assets, which currently remains the responsibility of DPW. Currently, 13 immovable assets abroad, superfluous to the needs of that department, have been identified for disposal. These include the former chancery and official residence in Bonn. There are 8 houses in Namibia, and I have the list available. An immovable asset disposal policy was approved by the Minister of Public Works during the course of last year. The department has embarked on a process of developing country-specific disposal strategies in consultation with international relations, with a view to the disposal of these assets within the 14-15 financial year. The proceeds from such disposals will be returned to the fiscal. In moving forward, we would like to indicate or share with the House extensions of the principles of Giama to local government in relation to the asset register. And this will necessitate just some information sharing at the beginning, which is to indicate that, as Honourable Chairperson and members will be aware, Giama provides a framework of basic principles in accordance with which national and provincial departments must manage movable assets, which they control in executing their mandate. Giama is structured around certain building blocks. There are role players in the removal asset life cycle, and it revolves custodians who are responsible for acquiring, operating, and disposing assets, and then there are user departments who basically occupy the state removable assets. And certainly there are management processes within government. So Giama is very clear as this portrays the picture for national and provincial, whilst the management of all spheres of government stem from the same fundamental principles, the role players in local government differ significantly. So what we are doing here is we are identifying the similarities and differences that would assist us in our, if you like, our preference to roll GIAMA out to the local authorities. With regard to national and provincial government, we have user departments, as indicated, who use the assets, and they're required to compile user asset management plans. With regards to custodians, that would be, for instance, National Department of Public Works, we perform the caretaker function. We're required to provide information on immovable assets to users to help them with the compilation of the UAMP, and then as custodian, we're required to annually compile the custodian asset plan. So it's quite a rigorous process for national and provincial through the GIAMA legislation. However, with local government, there's no standard institutional delineation between users and custodians of immovable assets, as we can see. And there are no separate accounting offices in various departments within the municipality, as there are between user departments and custodian departments. So we're trying to unravel the similarities and differences. If you look at the management processes for national and provincial government, we are obliged to annually compile immovable asset management plans as part of the strategic budgeting processes and planning processes, and these are required to be submitted to Treasury to inform annual budget allocations. In respect of local government, a municipality is required to develop an IDP, an integrated plan, every 5 years, so it's not the same. They don't do it every year the way we do, which serves as its principal strategic management planning instrument. They have to review their IDPs every year, though. Municipalities are governed by other legislation, specifically the Local Government Municipal Systems Act, MSA 2000, and the Municipal Finance Management Act, 2003. These require the principal strategic document as the IDP, and also prescribes specific processes for the compilation of IDPs, which must be aligned with provincial and national priorities, and also prescribes consultation in relation to the compilation of IDPs. An IDP is an inclusive strategic planning guiding document for all development within the municipality. In terms of existing regulatory framework, an IDP may contain asset management strategy. So it's not obligatory as the UAMP or the CAMP is required to be. The shortcomings in the existing IDP process are that the IDP does not detail a specific immovable asset management planning process and does not make immovable asset management mandatory, as is the case in GIAMA. So that is just unpacking the strategic differences. Now, the DPW then has thought that perhaps there are two ways to look at this. The first alternative would be that the requirements for immovable asset management as a local authority could be incorporated in separate set of regulations issued in terms of the Municipal Systems Act, or amending existing legislation, in this case the Local Government Municipal Planning and Performance Management Regulations issued in terms of that Act. Second alternative would be specific legislation could be developed based on the requirements, organizational structure, and existing legal framework governing municipalities. So we currently, where we are in the process, have scoped and thought that there's maybe these two opportunities. We've renewed discussions with Department of Cooperative Governance regarding the best approach to this and how we would basically extend the principles of GIAMA to local government. The objective is to reach agreement on specific issues commencing in 2014. This time frame is just to get the in-principle agreements with COCTA going, DCOC, but clearly the rollout of this to local authorities will take some time, and certainly perhaps in the next 5 years we will get that. But from our side, we would like to see that happening, and we are working towards this as an objective. Honourable Chairperson, that is where we are on the first part of the presentation. I'm not sure if the slides have come. I'll be guided by Honourable Chairperson as to whether to proceed with the second part.
Let's proceed with the second part.
Thank you very much. The second part of the presentation is a demonstration of the level of the removal acid register built. The following slides demonstrate some of the enhancements as a result of rebuilding the department's removal acid register. The use of electronic data tools, GIS software, were used in compiling the removal acid register in the current financial year, as prepared in the previous financial year. The use of such tools and technology has enabled the department to consistently improve and maintain its removable asset register. So it's the following slides are pictorial slides of the look and feel. Where previously the asset register was a spreadsheet, or alternatively on the PMIA system, you can actually see that the asset register is now a module where you can actually feel what you have recorded in the information. So the first issue is on the IE Works, the GIS mapping capability. In this slide, for instance, we're able to map police stations across South Africa. And you can zoom in and out of the slide and see where that P for the police station would be, the locality, and so on. So one can really get the total picture, and you can zoom in for specific issues. The second issue is the capability to superimpose layers on GIS. This is used to identify properties in physical assessments. So the sophistication of the system is that on a photograph, which is the underlying picture of the site, you're able to overlay these layers, and the blue, for instance, is the residential land, and the red then is the state land. So you're able to automatically ring fence, and when you do that, you get the coordinates immediately coming through. You get the area of the land coming through. It's very exciting to feel this asset register. The next issue of the capability, I think if I just go back, and then honorable members will see the little pencil running around on that specific picture. Okay. Capability, what they call georeference surveyor, general diagrams. It's used to identify properties. Again, with that pencil running around, it's having a calculator in the background that's able to give you the information on the specific site that you've picked up, right? And it'll give you certain information that you require. The capability to build the asset footprint, this is created to determine the extent of the improvements. So where a site, for instance, has been identified, with the red line you're able to see where the actual physical demarcation of the land is. The yellow then outlines the building, and it gives you the length of the building. And from the length of the building, you can then calculate there's the square meterage of the site. In this case, it's 866.72 square meters. That's the size of the site. And you can actually work out the footprint of the building as a square meterage of that. And these are things that we are now having, and it's really showing we're getting to know exactly what we have and where we have it and how big it is and what it's made of. On the next slide, you have the before and after improvements. This is just two pages. One can get much more than this. Where the two columns on the left would have been the page of the information previously, you will see there, for instance, street number unknown, street name unknown, current use of asset unknown, responsible department unknown. The enhancement is now populating all that information, and we know exactly who's in there, where it is. We then have the map and the footprint, we have the photographs, and that is where we are with this program. And this is currently achieved with a physical verification for 34,000 assets, and we're hoping to get the rest by the end of the financial year. So this is the certainty of what we're seeing in our asset register. I think my final slide is to talk on the way forward, to just state that the program is very large and complex and requires extensive consultation and cooperation among state departments to enable us to produce the required compliant removable asset register. But the positive thing is that we really have excited our brother custodians or sister custodians. And certainly from what we see in the public works family, this is happening with everybody. The completion of the removable asset register enhancements phase two work packages, is what we're driving at now. March 2014, March 2015, and March 2016 being the timeframes that were agreed with the committee, and we're not moving on those timeframes. Sorry, we're not sliding on the timeframes. We are sticking on those timeframes. Critical success factors: adequate, dedicated resources to deliver the project to ensure maintenance thereafter. We, as part of phase two, we're putting that operating model that needs to ensure the capacity and the processes to ensure the sustainability that what was just demonstrated continues into the future. Ongoing cooperation and improved capacity in the state land custodians departments and enhancement of their own immovable asset registers, and establishment of structures and processes in national and provincial DPWs to maintain such enhanced immovable asset registers. And that is what is currently being set up moving forward, that this constant dialogue and discussion happens. And with the IE Works, certainly for the Public Works family, we will be at this level and will have the record of assets under Public Works firmly under control within the time frame. That closes the presentation on the immovable asset register. There's then the rollover from last week on the immovable asset condition assessment guideline. Chairperson will guide on whether to take questions or proceed straight on to the rest.
Mr. Chabasco, thank you very much for the presentation. This is the stuff that we've been looking for, waiting for. This is interesting. And I don't know why did you take so long, especially when it comes to the demonstration that you have just completed. This is good stuff. But remember last week there was a question on the quadrant land. Remember? Where we said in your today's presentation you need to cover the issue of quadrant land. You only touched on page 11. Page 11, paragraph, I think it's paragraph 2, if not 3. Let's go back there so that you were covered before in gate number two, paragraph 2, where you talk about gap areas and splitters of state land between riverbank and boundaries. I thought you will cover, because we indicated to you that in the Eastern Cape presentation it was covered, and we wanted to be clarified or to be informed to say who owns river. Because our problem was, if the rivers are not owned by government, our perception was that anybody can go and divert water from the river. And it has been happening, those dark areas. We could just divert water from the river to a dam in your farm, and we wanted to be clarified on who owns. In a very simple explanation, that should not be technical. Over to you.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you very much. To clarify the ownership of rivers, I linked up with the Chief Surveyor General's office at the Department of Rural Development. I have a printout, and I will try and be very brief to the portions that are applicable to your answer, but I would be very willing to share this information outside of the meeting if required. Ownership of the water component of rivers vests in the name of the state. That is the water itself. However, the user rights to the water component of the river vest in the state, the general public, and the abutting property owners. So it would depend in a specific situation as to how that user right is then carried out. But principally, the user rights are the state, the general public, and the abutting owners of the property, depending on where this water is. The extent of rights to the water and the land comprising rivers is commonly deduced from the cadastral description of rear boundaries of properties that are surveyed by professional land surveyors and approved by the Surveyor General in terms of the Land Survey Act No. 8 of 1997. If the rear cadastral boundaries of contiguous properties are described as the middle of the river, then ownership of each property extends to the vertically projected curvilinear line of the middle of the river onto the riverbed. So So what they're saying is if two property owners on either side of the river own the land, they own the riverbed to the middle of the river, but not the water that flows on top of it. If the rear boundaries of contiguous properties are described as the left or the right bank, then ownership of each property extends to the curvilinear line defined by the top of the relevant bank. The extent of the land between the tops of the banks, i.e. the river, is then state land. If the boundary on one of two contiguous properties is the middle of the river, while the other property extends to its bank, then the extent of the land between the middle of the river and the relevant bank is state land. Madam Chairperson, this is quite complicated to digest. It is prescribed, and the reconciliation process and the physical verification needs to determine the applicability of this, certainly on the department's movable assets. But there is a very clear position, and it describes how this issue of ownership of land and the river and the water is to be read and understood.
Mr. Chabasco, can we get a copy of the portfolio committee? So that we can also further be clarified on this issue. For us to, because it's technical stuff.
Absolutely.
Technical stuff, we need to be guided and be advised.
Absolutely.
Thanks for can we engage? Yes, ma'am.
Thanks on that one. About the rivers. Maybe if there are any deposits, like the minerals, who do they belong to? Just out of my head.
Honorable Dreyer will follow Honorable Nongwane, and we will follow by Mama Madlala, Estole, Ma November. Yes, Honorable Dreyer?
Madam Chair, yes, the first one is just a question for clarity. On the first presentation, page 13 on the, or page 26 on the slide, I think it's slide 26. It depends on which presentation you're looking at. Page 13 or page 26, but it's this slide looking at the DPW vesting status progress as of 31 December 2013.
Yes,
I don't understand. There's the yellow and the grey. I understand that the one line parcel to be vested, that's yellow, the grey DPW vested, already vested. But then I see with the difference, the nine provinces, for example, in KwaZulu-Natal, the graph is much higher than all of the others. The yellow and the grey combined. So does that mean there are many more properties in KwaZulu-Natal that have either been vested or still to be vested? And why are there so many more state properties in KwaZulu-Natal than in any of the others? It's just, you know, if you look at the
geographical
side.
The yellow, does it not say to us it's land that is not vested?
Yeah, but it's not the proportion. It's that graph. Indicating KwaZulu-Natal is just so much higher. It's over 9,000, so that's the number of land parcels altogether. It's over 9,000, while none of the second province is 6,000, for example. That's Gauteng, which is geographically a very small province. So I just wonder, why is KwaZulu-Natal so much higher? Why do they have so many more, significantly more land parcels than any of the other provinces? It's just for clarity. I just don't understand it. And then the second thing is just a comment, really. I just enjoy looking at the modern technology being used, you know. And what I did here with my iPad, the one example they gave us is One Diggers Street, Barkley West in the Northern Cape, as an example on this. So I quickly Googled it here on my iPad, and then you get the same address, and then you get a picture of the site, and you can see exactly what it looks like using Google. No, that technology has been available. I can, just using my iPad here. So
you can now Google at your place, home.
Yes,
the only thing is that it will come up small. You won't be able to
see
your house.
If anybody's address, if I have your address, I can see a picture of your home, like this one. I just use this specific address. Now, we now have the same technology in the department. That's great, but, you know, that was available all along, so I just wonder why did it take so long.
On a lighter note.
Did you coordinate, you know?
On a prayer, on a lighter note.
Yeah.
I on a lighter note, I always phone my gardener at home to say, what are you doing in the garden? I can see you, you're moving up. And then, you know, that's how I control him. To say, I see you moving up and down on a lighter note, yes?
Yeah. So this particular site, I can look at it right here on my iPad. One Digger Street, Barclay West. Yeah, so that's interesting.
Thanks, Professor. Just a few questions. My first question is on slide 13, where they say commence work on state domestic facilities. What I want to know, the number is fairly large. That's what the presenter said. How much, approximately, if you can tell us how much, because he simply said the number is fairly large. If you can specify how much, that's fairly large. My second question is the next slide on page 14. When they say initiate operation take back, the process of that take back, when is it starting and there? How are they going to know whether this is a state land not registered or what? How is the process going to take place if they can expatiate to us? Then the on slide, what's that, 29, yeah. The TBV states, then they are saying that they are divided into three portions, that others are under Department of Rural, others on DPW, others on provincial government. But if they can give us the number that so much is under DRGLR, so much under DPWV, and so much under provincial government. And the second question on that slide, I would like to know, when will be the draft of the immovable assets policy document for PMTE be finalized? My last question is on the page 30, I mean slide 30 on the 13 immovable assets abroad. If they can provide us with the information where abroad with 13 immovable assets. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mom.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, Chairperson, I'm apologizing for to be so late because of the traffic. I was from Gauteng today. And the other one, Chairperson, is the...
you shouldn't have explained it because the your apology...
Okay. And the other one, Chairperson, we must appreciate the presentation because this is an eye-opener. But mine, Chairperson, is on page 23. I think it's number 3, the last paragraph, which says PGW vesting business cases developed and forwarded to the province's next steps are to be processed back application. But what does it tell us? What does it mean? If we can understand. And the other thing I want to find out, because we have the ministerial committee, what role have they played? Did they assist the department? If they did, how far? And what other things that I want to find out, Chairperson, is that one, the provincial, if you separate the provincial land parcel and the national land parcel, do they know how many per province? And the last one, Chairperson, is that one of the situation of land. Where are they situated? The land parcel. Where are they situated?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the department for the wonderful presentation. And mine is on slide 5. It's just to ask that how many land records and control of state immovable assets were placed in the hands of the private parties. second one, going with that one, is have the records been found and the immovable assets restored to the state. Then on slide 6, Jefferson, is how many sales land, how many sales and transfers were incorrectly transferred by the state attorney. Clarify the period in which these assets were incorrectly transferred, and also clarify the title deeds in the deeds office in accurate. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's a clarity seeking question. First of all, I think I need to echo my colleague on the, I think it's a good presentation, really. Shows that there is some work done by the department. Really commend you for that. My first question is around the Operation Buyisa and Operation, what was the first one? Bring back. What is the difference? Take back and bring back. So that's my first question. And take back and bring back. And then the on slide number 18, there are two service providers that have been appointed to execute the task. It's PwC Consortium and then E-Evaluations. Just to check if there's any skill transfer to the department from the, because I believe this should be the consultants that are doing this, the job, if there are any, and the monitoring of the monitoring of the process of the skills transfer to the department, so that we don't depend on the consultants all the time. That's it.
Over to you. Oh, Mark.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of state land or buildings in foreign countries, can you unpack to us as to whether how many buildings in each country, how many land parcels in each country, and if you're selling them, are you selling them in bulk or you sell them in bits and pieces?
Honourable Chairperson, thank you very much. I'll do my best to answer the questions. I missed one of the Honourable Members' questions while I was writing speedily, and I will request the gentleman to recap on the questions. But let me perhaps answer these quickly and then take that, or would the Honourable Member like to give me his questions again? Perhaps to start on the issue of the mineral rights on rivers. I'm afraid I cannot categorically at this meeting provide a definitive answer on that. My understanding is that there is a government position on the mineral rights, but I would want to check exactly what the accurate answer to that is, if the Honourable Chairperson will allow me rather to respond in writing so as not to misinform the committee on the issue of mineral rights that accrues to an asset. With regards to the number of the KZN properties, the total number is in fact the over 9,000. As to why KZN has a much larger list of state-owned properties, I can only imagine the reasons are historical, possibly as a result of the amalgamation of the former TBVC, etc. I would not know why the figure is as high as it is there as opposed to the other provinces. It's possibly the heritage of the country and how we got to be where we are today. Again, if if the Honourable Member would like a more specific response, I can certainly do some research and do our best to provide as to why that sphere of government ended up having as much as they did. With regards to the third question, which speaks about the Google and the technology, it is such that the department has used historically as an asset register the PMIS, the Property Management Information System, which is a very, very old electronic database that principally, not like an Excel spreadsheet, because there is financial capability on it to pay leases and rent and rates and taxes and so on, but for historical reasons it was not changed from what it was developed as initially. And the intention of this enhancement program is to bring in all these latest technologies based on really a thorough research across the board as to the form and content of an immovable asset register that would be GRAP compliant. And I think these were some of the issues that were identified that speaks to cutting edge, moving forward, the kind of stuff that you need in terms of evidence to make up what an immovable asset register is. With regard to the questions on the SDF, the information I have with me currently is that for the National Department, the figure is about 5,000 properties that would be appearing on land parcels that are owned by other spheres of government, tribal authorities, private land. The phase two exercise is to confirm what has been found to date and then clear it out so that we, as best we can, have the building on that portion of land cut away and made the land of DPW subject to the negotiation with the landlord and clear this issue. Currently, we disclose the asset, but not the underlying land parcel. That is disclosed by the custodian privately or provincially. The figure is around 5,000, and it's part of the reconciliation process. In relation to the two questions on Operation Take Back and Bring Back, perhaps to share with the committee that Operation Bring Back was conceptualized in 2011 at the time and it was a voluntary process that sought to allow people that had taken state land the opportunity to bring forth what had happened, be given a sense of reprieve within a certain time frame, so that from an honesty perspective the land could revert back to the state as custodian. The program was developed for launch, and a call center had been set up, but the program was not launched because of the historical changes in DPW. The focus shifted at that point to say, before we go on this mission, let us first check and get a sense of certainty on what we do know about our assets and see if ourselves we can find anything that's missing. And then at that point have a program that will claim back or take back. So it's no longer this issue of relying on the voluntary ownership of somebody, but rather us knowing what we ought to have and what we do have, and then going out to claim back that which is rightfully ours. And the reconciliation process leading to last year, as well as the physical verification process, will bring forth the balance, if you like, that doesn't reconcile for further investigation. Phase two of the immovable asset register is to conceptualize and update this operation bring back into an operation take back. And we are working with our...
Operation Bring Back, is it not on a polite side? Than Operation Take. You just take without any negotiations. That's how I take it. Does it does it without asking. You take without asking. Is it what you're saying? Does it differ from Operation Grab? Because if you grab also, you don't, there are no negotiations. So I think we need to look into take back. You can take without a negotiation. I can take that tin off. That's how I understand it. That's why I'm saying English is my third language. Is it humble?
Zimbabwe is dying.
It's a what?
Zimbabwe is dying.
No, I just want to be really, to understand whether it's a good word to say. Is it good to say take back? Can you clarify us on that one?
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much for sharing those views with us. I think that the department's position on this is not the reliance on the willingness of somebody to come and confess, but rather the department's responsibility to manage and exercise control over its assets. And where something has found to have gone astray for whatever reason, to ensure processes are put in place to reclaim that property. The take back is our loose speaking term at the moment to say, but it's about us as custodians taking back our property. It's not the acronym that we have launched it with, we are still developing it with. It's just to signify the slightly different approach, with a significant approach to say, but we have a responsibility on behalf of the electorate to ensure that we retrieve our properties. There would be processes put in place to ensure compliance with how you do that. I assume that if we found somebody that shouldn't be on the property, that we would follow the legal steps accordingly, to make sure that we get the property back in the rightful way that this is done.
If we translate that into my language, it will be saying,
yeah.
When you translate it into Ishagan, Nateka, itikoraka elir. And in my language, it will be rude if we use take. Take, I just take, you know? Without negotiating, without, you know, because I'm trying to say, let's use words that will not be translated into all these languages. Because in my language, I just take without negotiating, without consulting. This is my father's land. This is my ancestor's land. I just take. When we translate into my language, maybe I need to be assisted. Right?
I think the message is loud and clear, and we certainly thank the committee for that guidance. As indicated, we were, as officials, loosely speaking of it to help us understand the mind shift. But certainly there is a connotation that the Honourable Chairperson and members are sharing with us that is inappropriate. And as we develop the policy, we'll definitely take that into account so that the wrongful implication that could be associated with take back, in fact, is not the case. The intention is that the department exercises responsibility and retrieves in the appropriate manner the assets which need to be retrieved. I fully agree and understand with the implications of the take back, and we'll certainly, you know, we'll consider that back, and we will take that as really well-meant advice. Thank you for that. In relation to slide 29 on the TBVC state, the breakdown, this is an exercise that we would have to do subsequently together with the Department of Rural Development. Arising from the provisions of the Constitution in 94 and how the TBVC properties would be apportioned between national and provincial government, one would have to do an exercise that says how many of the total assets were TBVC assets, and of that, how many went to national government and how many went to provincial government or any other custodian as prescribed. As I speak, I do not have the breakdown. We have not zoomed in on that specific sector. But if there is a requirement and if a little time can be provided for us to do that, we would certainly, with our custodial departments, put that exercise together if it is required by the committee.
Mr. Chabaswa, I just want to clarify the committee. This presentation, does it include underground assets? And further explain to us whether underground assets are national competency or municipality. Because you remember when you made a presentation and we wanted to know, to say, are you able to detect assets that are underground? And we even recommended as a portfolio committee that why don't we use a system that is used for detecting mines or something like that. You still remember we made a recommendation that why don't we use military technology? So you've explained to us, is it a national competency? Are underground assets part of this report? What is it?
Honourable Chairperson, the figures related in this report are the sector of the assets that are of the public works family, broken down to the National Public Works itself. I would not misinform the committee on the issue of underground assets. I would like the opportunity to go back and come back with a proper answer that addresses this issue. I currently do not have this information, and I'm not too clear on the issue of underground assets. And I would like to be afforded the opportunity to come back with a response on that.
Sorry for the dialogue. I don't understand you when you say you're not clear about underground assets. Don't we have water pipes? Don't we have electrical cables? Those are some of the examples that we are giving. To say we need to know where our pipes are, underground cables are, those are government assets because our taxes were used for constructing those underground assets. We need to know where our water pipes are and all that. When we were in Messina doing our oversight work, there was a problem where a road was paved and they did not know that there were pipes running under. Those are the things that must be known.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you very much for the clarity in that regard. Certainly the department has, for instance, assisted other entities, example the Rand Water Board, for the request for them to lay pipes. If they need to traverse a piece of DPW land to put a water pipe or Eskom an electricity power line, then the approaches to the department and what is known as a servitude is registered. So that portion of the land of public works has a servitude demarcated and registered, and then the water, if it's Rand Water Board, will be on their asset register. The Eskom power line that is built over our land, by virtue of the servitude, the land is registered over to them for purposes of use of the servitude, and that would get recorded. We do have lists of all these servitudes. Yes, we do.
Chairperson, they didn't respond.
Thank you very much. If I then continue with the questions, the next question related to the PMTE asset removal asset management policy. Honourable members, the draft has been completed and is currently in circulation for approval. Our target is to ensure this is approved by the end of the financial year. This will then allow us to comply with the various accounting prescripts that emanate from that policy document. In relation to the immovable assets abroad, there were a number of questions. I can indicate, first of all, for those for disposal, given that the disposal responsibility remains with us, we have a parking garage in Paris, in France. We have the official, the former official residence and the former chancery in Germany. There are 8 houses in Namibia, the balance which need to be sold of the 13 original, of which 5 were sold. There is an official residence in Funchal, Madeira, which is an island 2 hours out of Portugal in the middle of the Atlantic. And then there is an official residence in Zurich, Switzerland. Those are the items identified as superfluous to the needs of the Department of International Relations, which we will then be developing specific strategies for disposal.
Mr. Kabasco, you remember in your last presentation on asset register, the issue of Namibia came up where you indicated that you have sold about 5 houses, if I'm not mistaken. And the transfer was not done because there were serious problems around that. And you're not saying to us those problems have been solved. You still say 5 houses were sold, but they were not transferred to owners. And there was a query that the way the houses were done, some, I'm sorry to say this, some of the officials, the way they did it was not correct. Because people, individuals were approached to say we are selling houses. You remember? Mr. Kabasco, should I continue? You remember? And there was a problem to say that should not have been done the way it was done. It should go for public consumption, should be advertised that there are houses being sold. How was that problem solved? I don't just remember correctly, you know, but something of that sort happened. How was it solved? Were the house totally transferred to the owners, or the problems are still there?
Honourable Chairperson, in response to that question, from the information that was provided to me, there were 13 houses left that were no longer needed. 13 made up of houses in Walvis Bay and in Windhoek. My understanding is that the department went out on a tender and bids were submitted for these 13 houses. At the time where the buyer then had to produce the guarantees, 8 of the buyers could not produce confirmation of funding. And 5 went ahead and were sold, and 8 were not sold, which is then the 8 that we need to now look at disposing. In relation to the conveyancing transaction, I'm afraid I don't have an update. My understanding is that they have been sold, were conveyanced, and payment has been made, but I would like to confirm and respond in writing categorically that the status of the conveyancing has been complete. But certainly these 8 have to now be re-advertised for disposal because the buyers that bid the first time could not come up with the finance from the information provided me. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I will then respond accordingly to that.
Continue.
Thank you very much. In relation to the other question of the foreign properties, and that is to say, do we know how much in each country and so forth? As indicated in the presentation, until 1999, the department was the custodian of foreign assets abroad. So our asset register had old historical records as at that time. In the reconciliation, and as indicated, Department of International Relations and Cooperation now manage those assets. They disclose them, they manage them fully. When they decide that the properties are superfluous, they inform us of that, and we then take them back and act, such as these 13. So I would not be in a position at this meeting to indicate how many they have currently, in which country they are. Being the subject of foreign affairs or international relations disclosure, we could approach them for this information, and in our bilaterals, we will engage on this matter with them. The question on how many sales were incorrectly transferred and the accuracy or inaccuracy relating to that. One of the fields in the old PMIS asset register is known as archived properties. Archived properties would include properties that were disposed of at a particular point in time. The phase two of the asset register reconciliation process is to look at that and unpack those that were disposed and get a sense of clarity and confirmation and reassurance that those were appropriately disposed of and that the matter has been conveyed appropriately. If any are found not to have been correctly transferred, then that would be subject of investigation in what we call this Operation Take Back Workstream. Of course, we understand the issue of the branding. I'm just using that for purposes of clarity in the meeting this morning. But for that workstream, they would then unpack whether these things were correctly or incorrectly transferred. The disposal policy was approved during the middle of last year. So anything that would have been approved from when the disposal had been stopped some years back, one would go back to say, when was the moratorium on disposals put in, and have disposals happened in that time when there was no disposal policy or when there was no mandate to dispose? Those are the kind of things we're going to be looking at in terms of the reconciliation of the assets. In relation to the two service providers for physical verification and whether there is a skills transfer, the two service providers are out on the field verifying assets to provide the information that was before you on the slide. Certainly the information that comes back is shared with the regional offices for purposes of verification. In that process, there is dialogue between the service providers and the regions. We set up the terms of reference according to which the service providers are working, and they report back to us in terms of what they are required to do. So there is constant dialogue between the service providers as well as officials in public works in the regions and at head office. And through that, the skills transfer is taking place. There is constant sharing of information, processes, and handing over of information. And we believe that through that, the skills transfer is taking place with the staff that we have in the department working on the asset register at the moment. I think the bulk vesting, the question on the bulk vesting, we have spoken of a vesting factory, and that is our way of describing that to meet the 2016 target, it's quite a large number that needs to be vested, and we cannot approach it in the past way where one by one each asset would have to be done and submitted individually. So the regions who are required to provide the pipeline through to the Department of Rural Development, they're looking at this thing in bulk. And whilst they identify the characteristics of each asset, it's about providing bulk through to regional office, sorry, to rural development through the PSL VDC processes. So that is what we mean by vesting in bulk, that the quantum is just going to be so big that it's being given through in bulk rather than one by one by one. I think there were two other questions from the Honourable.
Before proceeding, you remember that when you briefed us last time, you said the completion date of the of evaluations and PricewaterhouseCoopers is February 2014. And now you're saying they are on the ground. Have you extended their contract, or will they really complete the end of February as indicated?
Honourable Chairperson, as indicated in my slide, the time frame is the 28th of February. We have not extended their contract currently. They have written to us indicating that they require the additional months to the end of March, given the quantum and the findings in terms of the reconciliation they are busy with. And through the administrative contracting processes, if there is a matter of extension to be granted for a month, that will be considered. If, on the other hand, it's a performance issue and the extension is not to be granted, then the matter will be treated accordingly. The correspondence has come through over the end of last week, and yesterday, while I was on my way to Cape Town, I have seen the letters this morning, but there is a process now around the consideration of performance vis-à-vis the contractual requirements of the service provider.
Follow-up, Mr. Chabasco, you remember that you promised the committee that the content of your contract with the two service providers, we requested that what is contained in the contract, because our problem as a portfolio committee was that who is going to own this report and what is contained, because we don't want a situation where, I'm not saying they are going to do that, where the service providers will remain with copies that they can sell to anybody. And you haven't come back to us to say this is what is contained in the contract of the Department of Public Works and the two service providers.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you very much. As indicated previously, the service providers have indicated that the physical verification will be finalized within the financial year. Although there is a slippage in terms of the time frame owing to the numbers and the complexity of the work at hand. We regret the oversight and will ensure that the contracts, a copy of the contracts are forwarded to the committee. I can mobilize that as soon as the meeting is over, and copies will be made available to the secretariat of the committee for consideration for their information. I think there were two questions from the Honourable Member that I missed. I apologize while I was writing.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first one was, what was the interministerial committee? What I want to find out, have they assist the department? That was the first question. And the second one was, where are the public works land parcels situated in the country? And the third one was, how many provincial facilities cannot be separated from the larger national land parcels?
Mr. Chabasco, can you bring back those demonstrations so that it should be simple and easy for the honourable member to see? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, I think that through the engagement between the executive members in the interministerial committee, certainly from the perspective of public works and rural development, there has been dialogue in assisting us with the process, and together with National Treasury, the two departments have been engaging very robustly. As indicated, with rural development, both for purposes of vesting as well as the PSLDC structures, as well as through the reconciliation, the availability of the deeds downloads. There's been a lot of information provided from rural development and ourselves, which we have been reconciling. Both parties, under the auspices of the IMC, which then has the committee below that of the DGs, there is certainly very robust dialogue between the DGs and specifically the department and rural development at that level, as well as the level below. There are meetings that take place whenever required that deal with the issues of vesting, amongst other things, the title deeds, the surveying. So certainly from the leadership, the support is there and the drive is there to get this process going. We feel it and then we take it down. With finance specifically, the custodians, which are Rural Development and Public Works, together with National Treasury and the Office of the Accountant General, again under the auspices of the IMC and the Forum, we have sought the sector-specific guide, which has provided information in relation to the accounting of assets. There was a sector-specific guide applicable to the audit last year. There's an amendment of that for the audit of this year, and it's all the robust interaction at the various levels of discussion. Sometimes these are formal meetings, sometimes they are telephone calls, sometimes they are very broad meetings of the various role players. And I think basically there's dialogue at the various levels towards assisting this. In relation to where the DPW land parcels are in the country, I think that we would know where they are from the asset register that we've constructed, and through this specific GIS mapping capability, whilst we've mapped the police stations here, we could do another map that would then take these specific land parcels that you see in orange, and if you take it back to the big map of South Africa, one could then put all the oranges there and say, that's where DPW land is. It would be very tiny on a map of South Africa, but because of the electronic wizardry, we would actually be able to have that picture. So that is the functionality that we believe we have in the system. We know where they are because they are now in the records, and then there's this ability to pictorially describe it. So such would be available as soon as, you know, as soon as all of this can then press a button, and then there you have this version of it or that version. This is an example for police stations, but you could do it for every category of asset. And then you could see where the spread, the geographic spread is.
I'm glad that they're kind of on board with technology. I mean, that's the way to go, obviously. At long last.
I think the issue of the separation of DPW national and provincial land, where it cannot be separated. Currently, through the reconciliation, the various custodians are very clear on what is or isn't their land through the discussions we've had. There is in the one slide in the first part of the presentation that figure of 1,400 that is still where there is discussion between national and provincial. So that is the reconciliation that we want to happen by the end of the financial year, right? And that is currently what remains for the registered properties that need to be reconciled between us and the provinces. The other category of properties between national and provincial, it's not to say that they can't be separated, is this issue of the SDF. If we've built a police station, there's our building, and the land below it is the province land, then it needs to be separated. So we need to sit with the province and say, colleagues, you allowed us to put a police station. Can we then draw a line and get the surveyor to mark that off? And can we create a site underneath this police station and then record it as ours, no longer as yours? And you can keep the rest of your provincial. That is the whole exercise of the SDF that needs to happen. And then I think that when that is done, then there's absolute certainty between national and provincial. It has to be so because we're required to disclose it as such. And I hope that answers the questions, Honourable Member.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Member. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. material. It's not a new question or comment, just a reminder the representative offered to give us information in writing about something we didn't have available straight away. When I asked about the land parcels, so many land parcels, I said, can we have the square meterage or the hectares so that we know, because that I think will give us some better indication. Some land parcels may be very, very small, so it gives a huge figure, but it doesn't actually say what the size of the land. So we can get that in writing.
Are you done?
Yes. Honourable Chairperson, that is for the answer.
Yes, can we continue with our presentation?
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, the last part of the presentation is on the immovable asset condition assessment guideline, being the item rolled over from the meeting the committee had with the department last week. And the presentation is a few slides that talks to this and provides, first of all, the background, where GIAMA requires custodians to conduct condition assessments of all their immovable assets periodically. Pursuant to this, the department led the development of an immovable asset condition assessment guideline in respect of buildings for national and provincial custodians. The purpose of this guideline is to be a first point of reference and to provide custodians with a framework to conduct assessment of physical state and functionality of immovable assets which are under their control and their impact on user departments' service delivery ability. So it's very specifically to get a guideline that assists custodians in identifying the condition of their buildings and the impact that this is having on the user departments who are tenants in the buildings. The status of the guideline, I'm informed that the guideline with a standard template to record the findings of such condition assessments was developed by a task team comprising property managers and built environment professionals from the National and Provincial Public Works Departments. So once again, the two arms of Public Works, nationally and provincially, have jointly sat and developed such a guideline with a template for recording the findings. The guideline will be applicable to both national and provincial custodians and will in due course be submitted to the Public Works MinMec structure for endorsement prior to final approval by the Minister of Public Works, which is a requirement in terms of the GIAMA legislation. In applying the condition assessment guidelines, custodians will follow the undermentioned process. First of all, a custodian will determine and specify the information to be included in the condition assessment. Various factors may influence the details of the information, and this includes the size of the portfolio, the nature of the building, its associated service, the occupational and health and safety risk. So there's a matter of managing the magnitude of the portfolio vis-a-vis the depth of which you need to go into to be able to use this information for planning and operational purposes. The immovable asset condition assessment template stipulates the minimum information required when undertaking the condition assessment for general buildings. And just a few slides on the actual process that is involved in this. First of all, there's an initiation process where custodians identify and conceptualize the type of condition assessment required and develop terms of reference for engagement of service providers in the event there is no internal capacity to undertake the condition assessment. Then there's the planning sphere, identify in-house capacity and external resources required, set performance measurement standards and details of the actual assessment. Then there's the implementation phase, which is the actual appraisal of the physical condition of the building. The process involves conducting condition assessment in line with timeframes, recording, reviewing, and updating of condition assessment data. Monitoring and controlling. Progress is measured against predetermined standards and the set timelines. And then there's the closeout phase, where a condition assessment report is provided that will assist in prioritization and development of condition-based maintenance programs. The results of the condition assessment exercise is encapsulated in a report which enables the ratings of building in accordance with desired standards. So typically a 5 would be good or a 1 would be bad, depending on the way that you've decided to rate the building's conditions. There would be development of an itemized maintenance schedule. So across your portfolio, you'd have your list of assets, and these condition assessments would then assist you with the prioritization of which assets need to be maintained first. You'd be able to have an estimate for the remedial work and report on longer maintenance needs, because this will say in the short term this has to be fixed. In the long term, that's what needs to be fixed in a specific building. Condition of buildings relative to desired condition necessary for service delivery benefits, right? What we're saying is that the condition assessment will indicate the level of which maintenance you require. How far do you need to go? Do you need to restore it to a brand new condition? Or is it something that if you do 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, that will be suitable for service delivery, given that there's a balance between the budget that's available on such a spread of assets vis-a-vis the actual service delivery imperatives? It will assist you with future budgeting, future maintenance plans, and definitely an area that's always under strain is the budget allocation for maintenance. And I think the drawing is a very empirical cycle that discusses that. So it's a very short presentation, Honourable Chairperson, that says that the guideline has been developed and is now waiting approval. Once this is approved, then I think the various custodians have a document that they can work with and go out and formally look at the condition assessments for various purposes. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Honourable members, last week we requested that they present this to us. Mr. Chabasco, we can see that as public works, we have started revamping lifts for CA in mass building. And we really appreciate that. Though it takes long for public works to revamp, we know that you don't easily get parts. You order them from Germany. I've done my own research. You order them from Germany and it takes long, but I think in future we need to have a provision for when revamping this list. They shouldn't take 2 or 3 months, and we should not wait for a situation where people get hurt, because in this very list, you know what happened. Thanks a lot for the presentation. Any question, honorable members? It was for our own information. Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Thank you, Mr. Chabasco, with your team. Thank our visitors here, Office of the AG. Thank you very much, and Khenit Idah. Next week is EPWP presentation. Thank you.